The first scene of Act 3 takes place in a burned-out church or cathedral of some sort. It's starting to storm, and people are taking shelter inside the ruin. The first arrivals are Kudryash and his friend Kooligan. Kudryash is a little scornful of all the merchant-class people out in their fancy clothes. Kooligan looks at the walls and finds ruined frescoes of Judgment Day and people falling into hell. Decoy enters, soaked to the skin and spluttering, angry to be stuck in the same place with people of a lower class. But Kudryash strikes up a conversation with him about the storm, in particular about how rods would prevent damage from lightning strikes. Decoy hasn't a clue about the science involved and proclaims that storms are punishment from God. The rain lets up and Decoy leaves in his usual huff. Now, at first blush, this little vignette doesn't seem to do anything at all to advance the plot, but in fact, there's a lot going on here. The old burned frescoes of judgment and hell are rife with implicit meaning. Judgment and hell are the very things that Katya is now sure are in store for her, since she's strayed from the strict protocol imposed on her by her old school society. Decoy and Kabanika are the main representatives of that restrictive society, and the rest of the merchant class in their fancy clothes. Meanwhile, Kudryash and Varvara are of a new, freer caste. As for the argument about lightning and storms, Decoy's interpretation is naturally from the old ways of superstition and judgment, while Kudryash is educated in science and interprets the phenomena from a completely different perspective, and he offers a simple solution to the danger of lightning. And why do you think that building with the frescoes burned in the first place? I bet it was from a lightning strike. Next, Varvara appears, and so does Boris. She rushes up to him with news. Tikhon has returned, and Katya's practically gone mad with guilt. Then Katya, Tikhon, Kabanika, and Decoy enter. Katya's in such a state that she's attracting the attention of the other people gathered there. Varvara tries to comfort her, but it's no good. Katya falls to her knees and right there, in front of everybody, confesses to having spent all 10 nights of her husband's absence with Boris. Kabanika smugly turns to her son and says, "See, it happened just as I said it would." Katya breaks away and rushes off into the storm. Thunder crashes and a storm swells from the orchestra, punctuated by several explosive renditions of the 8-note timpani motif. The final scene takes place on the banks of the Volga. Tikhon and the servant Glasha are out with lanterns, searching for Katya. Tikhon reports that Kabanika thinks Katya ought to be buried alive. He, on the other hand, still loves her, even after everything that's happened. They go off, continuing their search, and on come Varvara and Kudryash. Varvara has had enough of living with Kabanika. Kudryash's solution is simple. Run away to Moscow with him right this minute. So off they go to start a fun new life together, shedding the last vestiges of Kabanika's provincial middle-class chains. Freedom! And the snippets of Varvara's folksy theme heard here reveal to us its full meaning. If only Katya and Boris could break the same bonds so easily. Now along comes Katya herself. She's exhausted and hopeless. She realizes now that her confession did no good. All she did was destroy herself and throw away her honor, and Boris's too. In the distance, she thinks she hears singing, like a funeral. It's an offstage chorus. There's no text, and in the score, Janáček identifies it as the voice of the Volga. As her long soliloquy goes on, she contemplates death. Why won't it come to her? The only thing that she longs for now is to see Boris one last time. And if that can't be, to at least have him hear her words. She beseeches the wind to carry her voice to him. She loves him. And sure enough, Boris appears. And they fall into each other's arms almost in disbelief. They sing, "I see you again." And it really stands out because, contrary to Janáček's usual technique, he has both of them sing the very same line together. Here she is, asking the wind to carry her words, and then they find each other. They hold each other for a long time. Then Boris reveals that his uncle is sending him far away. For just a moment, Katya has a glimpse of freedom and says, "Take me with you." But, like Boris, she too is still in the thrall of the rules of society, and she quickly tells him to go on without her. She keeps trying to remember something that she wanted to tell him, and finally it comes to her. He should give money to every single beggar he meets on his journey. The sighing of the Volga continues as they part. Now alone on the riverbank, Katya imagines birds, just as she did with Varvara in Act 1, and Janáček brings back his bird music from that scene. The difference here is that she's imagining these birds fluttering around her grave, and flowers growing on it, and at last she's at peace. She leaps into the Volga. Someone sees her from the other bank and starts shouting. People rush in from all around, including Tikhon, Kabanika, and Decoy. Tikhon is about to go in after Katya, but Kabanika prevents him. Finally, he turns on her and says, "It was you who destroyed her, you and you alone." Katya's body is brought over to them. Decoy remarks, "Here's your Katya." Tikhon throws himself down on her and sobs her name. Ever composed and proper, Kabanika coldly thanks everyone for helping. And that's the end of the story. Janáček finishes the story musically in a masterful way. We're going to listen to the final 2 minutes of the opera, starting with Tikhon's heroic, almost Wagnerian-sounding accusation to his mother. You'll hear her brief response, then, in the trumpet, what will be the first of a series of repetitions of the fateful sleigh bell departure theme as it gets passed around various instruments of the orchestra. Tikhon cries Katya's name twice, simultaneously with Decoy's last line. Then everything stops, except for a solo oboe, very sadly and slowly playing the departure motif yet again. The oboe fades away, and the violins start repeating a very clipped, harsh figure that under the circumstances makes me think of the kind of sound a harpy might make. This is the accompaniment to Kabanika's cruel final line, the last line of the opera. When she's through, the timpani rings out, and the violins take up what starts out as a broader and slower version of the departure melody we've been hearing. Then Janáček takes the last four notes of that and repeats them frantically fast for a measure or two, then repeats it slower again, then fast again, and back and forth like that several more times. It's kind of a diabolical effect, and one reason why may be that those four notes sound a lot like the beginning of the Dies Irae, or Day of Judgment theme, from the Latin Mass for the Dead. So death and judgment have been hiding in that departure melody all along, but Janáček doesn't reveal it until now. The voice of the Volga returns almost in a roar, along with the fateful, overpowering timpani motif to end the opera. Janáček's music never ceases to amaze me. One minute he sounds like Puccini, the next Wagner, Debussy, even Alban Berg. But really, what it always sounds like is Janáček, and nobody else sounds like that. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you at the opera.